Welcome to Story Talks, where we discuss the practices that engage, motivate, develop, retain, and attract people to businesses. We'll give you principles and tools based on real-world stories to leverage listening and storytelling to become a better leader and management professional. Story Talks is produced by Narrative, a company that focuses on personal storytelling for business.
Progress. Well, hello, Jules. nice to see you and be with you again and for another installment of our podcast, Story Talks. I am very excited today because we want to talk about finding your voice and what that takes, whether it's in the business world, in your personal life. Of course, we have a business angle in terms of things that we do here at Narrative, and of course, things that you do as well, Jules. And so we'll talk about that. But I know that inevitably, the personal and the professional connect, and that's kind of what we're all about is for people to be able to bring their whole selves to the workplace and be that much more productive. And storytelling can really help with that. So to kick us off, I thought I would just talk a little bit about one thing that happened recently.
Okay.
Where, you know, I've been working with this client, I think for 10 years now, and we, you know, we're engaged in different ways. And a big topic right now is diversity and inclusion, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And this client came back to us and you know, they really want to be able to let their employees know that A, they're listening after what happened last summer. And specifically, one of the catalysts was the killing of George Floyd. And, you know, which of course was sort of something a long time in the making, but that was a real catalyst for this company in particular. And many people were impacted by it. And it's an example of where, you know, companies mirror what's going on in society. We're all individuals, human beings on the planet, and we all go to our workplaces. And in this instance, it was impossible to park your private life at the door and go to work business as usual. And they recognized that. And so they recognized it and created these town halls and listening sessions all over their subsidiaries, all over the US. And really what came out of it were stories. Mm-hmm. And the leaders of these various divisions, who aren't super diverse, I have to say, this was very eye-opening to them. Some people had been in that company for 20, 25, 30 years, had seen it through many different ups and downs, consider it to be quite a progressive company when it comes to diversity and inclusion and those kinds of issues. And yet they heard things that they had never heard before. You know, the fear that mothers have for their children, people being personally impacted by arrests and useless, pointless harassment by the police just based on the color of their skin. High executives in this company were not immune to that. And so, you know, I wanted to kick that off because what transpired here is that by listening to those stories, it was eye-opening to the leaders, and then it helped them craft a new story around where they want diversity and inclusion to go. And where they want to be as a company. So that it's no longer about this, you know, kind of square box of diversity and inclusion where we have to check the boxes and make sure that, you know, we do everything according to compliance and our policies. And that's going to be that. Now it's a much more holistic view that an approach that they're taking. And so I wanted to mention that because a big part of it was for these leaders to say to their employees, you have permission to bring me your grief, your fears, and all of those things that perhaps in the past you have felt would not benefit your career if you were to share them. That somehow, because you're not a white male executive, you would not go up the corporate ladder if you were to share those. And now we're saying, nope, we want to hear that because something's wrong, something's broken, and we want to make sure that we fix it.
Well, I think that's important because we've had many iterations of well-intentioned templates and posters and offices and forms, but there has to be a commitment that's sustainable and measurable as we move forward. The other thing is there's a great expression that the Japanese have, like that change happens from the ground up. And I think that's part of things we have to factor in, and where stories are very important, because we can tell stories in movies or films or in company videos, but inserting those stories into small conversations, into examples when somebody sees them, and empowering with that tool how to communicate things that are important with them and emotional, and also to teach the other half how to listen and be uncomfortable and be patient. The other part is figuring out how and when we seize those opportunities for people to learn. And sometimes they're in group settings, sometimes they're in one-to-one conversations, offline, something like this on Zoom, in a phone call saying, I need to share something. So it's giving people the tools and the comfort of how they can navigate everything. Because you can't schedule sometimes when and something's going to happen or somebody's going to react. And I think what you're doing now with storytelling is helping people pay attention. Mm-hmm. And things that were invisible or hiding in plain sight, I always say. A lot of things we're experienced have always been there. But now we're seeing it a little bit more. And we need to ride that forward and drive initiatives. So the big moments and the the big moments you're talking about, getting leaders to communicate, as well as the smaller moments within the staff, that they can own that talent and know how to structure some of that dialogue. We're not telling you to be theater, you know, and here's your script, and this is what you say, and this is the building, the tension in the moment. No, having an authentic conversation that resonates with that individual, and they get your context, and even if they're not grabbing all of it, they understand where you're coming from. And I think that is, and then be prepared for the receiving and the listening. So it's a whole culture change of how we approach dialogue.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point, being prepared to receive, you know, the response to your own story, which is something that we certainly do or encourage our clients to do, is to think about that relationship between listening and telling, right? That there's actually a reciprocal relationship between listening and storytelling, which means that the way you're listening to me right now is informing and shaping how I'm speaking, and the way I'm speaking is shaping how you're listening. And so it's this constant dance. And the thing that we're up against are the assumptions that we have about one another based on absolutely nothing, you know, based on just someone walking through the door, their appearance, their clothes, whatever it is. And we're mostly unconscious of that, right? And so when we tell a story, that suddenly makes that preconception, that assumption that we had about that person when they walked into the door, it melts away, especially if the story has a particular intention, right? And if it's if it's kind of directional, I would say. So to come back to that example of diversity and inclusion, when you have, you know, I was working with a woman, you know, who's been in this company for a long time, and she's white and she's from Ireland. And we're specifically talking about Black talent at this event. And she's talking about the efforts that they're making to advance Black talent. And so, you know, the minute that she not walks through the door, because we're doing it on Zoom, but I have a certain image of her. And I'm like, I wonder how she's going to connect. And she tells me the story about growing up in Northern Ireland during the sectarian troubles. Mm-hmm. And that she, for being a Catholic, was called a teak, which is a very derogatory term. And, you know, she would hear things like, oh, you can recognize a teak because their eyes are closer to each other and their nose is long, you know, all these things. Mm-hmm. And she was the minority, you know, and she had gone from being in a majority town, you know, Catholic town, to suddenly being only 1% Catholic and seeing all this discrimination coming her way. And the minute she tells that story, it's like, oh, that's where you have to open with. You know, that's where you have to open with, because that's how you connect on this topic, which, what is it? What is diversity and inclusion? It's really about exclusion. And that's sort of what you, when you put a storytelling lens on any topic, you're looking for contrast and you're looking for something that's personal to you, where you had something that was painful, that was, you know, hard and challenging, and where there was a conflict. And you have to be willing to do that. And so this woman was willing to do that, because her intention is to connect with this audience and to then give it back to them and say, look, I know where this is coming from. I can't be in your shoes. I can't change the color of my skin. I mean, that's not the experience. Mm-hmm. That's not the lived experience I have. And yet there's something that connects us, because we're human beings and we all go through something. But you have been through something in the last year and a half, that I could not possibly comprehend, even with my background and what I just told you as a story. Mm-hmm. But I'm just here to tell you that I'm here to listen, right? And that's where that dance starts, right? The dialogue starts, mm-hmm, between listening and telling. When you're willing to tell a story like that, where there was something that wasn't, you know, doesn't necessarily put things under the best light, or it reveals something about yourself that maybe you never thought you would have to kind of relive in a way, mm-hmm, because it was a painful experience. And, you know, it's not fun for her to go back to that time. And yet you transcend that, because there's some aspiration here. There's a, mm-hmm, goal that's bigger than yourself. And that indeed, in this case, is really about bettering society and improving the lives of certain people compared to others, so that we can get to parity. You know, that's kind of what's in her mind. So when you have that bigger thing in your mind, suddenly you're able to go places that perhaps you wouldn't have dared to go if you didn't have that very specific intention to transcend, you know, that moment that was painful for you. If you don't have that, it's really hard to do. And it's almost even dangerous to do that, right? Because you might, mm-hmm, re-traumatize yourself for what? For what purpose, really? Here, the purpose was worth it.
Why don't we say make something of a mess, meaning like take what was negative and traumatic and problem, and saying, well, there's something we can play forward and release, and also do some good and help somebody, you know, with the listening, not to put everything on them, but just to connect. And it, I guess what it does is does build, hopefully you have choices when you've gone through a lot. You can shut down, or you can develop your empathy skills and use it to move forward. And that's what we're endeavoring to do, I think, is to build empathy. We can't come in and structure. It's not like we're, you know, car mechanics saying we're going to insert an empathy and listening thing, but to exercise that skill and give somebody confidence, yeah, and awareness that could be, their experience could be used for good, and listening and building a relationship with somebody. But it's more listening now than ever. And I'm wondering what your experience, because I do a lot of listening in a lot of groups, giving a lot of talks there, the leadership, like we, in this last year and a half, we've paused, we've panicked, we've persevered, but I do think there's also an opportunity for, in our various states of working by ourselves or separated, mm-hmm, to look at the individual more and what we can bring to the conversation or to our organization. It's all about the group, but also building the strength of the individual. Are you seeing anything with your leadership conversations right now, like a shift in mindset or an approach of how they're working?
Yeah, there's definitely two motivations, you know, one to tell a story. One is to sort of empower. Leaders come in to empower their employees to tell, mm-hmm, stories of their own, so that it's no longer tell the origin story of the leader and you'll be fine, you know, and that's, mm-hmm, what we want you to espouse, are the values that live in that origin story. But then there's a missing link, which is what a lot of people are realizing now, is that each individual needs to connect to those values through their stories. And so that's been definitely an uptick, I would say, from, mm-hmm, the traditional thing of a leader coming to say, I have a pitch or I have a presentation, help me with it. I want you to help my team come up with their own stories, because I need their stories as a leader. And that goes back to the what we're talking about with listening, right? As a leader, you need to listen to those stories, and that's where your ideas come from. That's one set. The other thing is that increasingly individuals outside of the scope of their of what their company offers are approaching us or showing us some interest. And our co-founder, Murray Nossel, because of seeing this really, and because it's also close to his heart and his life's work, has been offering a, you know, just started to offer a masterclass that that is full now and is going to be, you know, it's going to be an ongoing thing. And what's interesting about it is that these are individuals that are, you know, paying out of pocket, or maybe their companies are actually offering them, you know, to choose what kind of training they're going to do. And it's about creating a memoir. So, you know, it seems on the face of it really far from a business interest. But what's interesting is that it's a lot of business people who are entering this class. Mm-hmm. And the reason is that it's not so much about writing your story or writing a book, you know, but it's much more about looking at your life story and seeing, you know, what are the moments that were pivotal to you, and the benefit of noticing those moments, recording those moments, and telling a story out of that to other people, so that these other people can sort of see who you are, what you're about, what you're passionate about, and what you want to be doing in the world. So it's a kind of a, you know, it's definitely not the traditional spin of the memoir that you might see in you know, in your library or your bookshop, but it's really, and yet it kind of comes to the same thing, right? Because it is it is a life story. But these people are interested in that because they're like, hey, maybe my leaders aren't stepping up. Maybe, you know, I need to look at my own story and tell my story so that my leaders will listen, so that my community will listen, take action, and make a change of some kind. And so, you know, a lot of these people are seeing it at like, I'm building my capacity here. I'm building my skill set. I'm going to bring this back to my team. And if I'm able to tell my life story, guess what? I bet you I can tell a great client story, you know, without being so intimidated by it or by the process. Because if I can do this for myself, then I'll really be able to listen to others and maybe even encourage them to tell their stories. You know, so I think those are the two things that I'm seeing, you know, to summarize. It's one, the kind of self-aware leader who's aware that they need the stories of their employees and tell us, work with our team. And then those that aren't that, but people on their team are saying, hey, I'm going to go do this course and bring it back. And they'll see what a difference it makes when you're able to tell your story.
I want to raise my hand and go, ooh, I have two examples. We were talking about practical applications because that's how we build ourselves in our career, left brain. But here's two examples. Like before we got on this podcast, I was catching you up about a conference I gave. And a lot of times when I'm doing a workshop and I'm thinking of a story, I'm thinking, I've got nothing. But suddenly, because I was in the writing mode, in the thinking mode, and probably a little panicking mode about what was going to connect and the right story that was going to resonate with the audience, I realized I had something from my past and school days that was totally on point. And I was able to use it about it, a person that was a chairperson in our college that inspired and motivated us to listen and look at our communities different. And in that moment, if I wasn't in ruminating mode and thinking out loud and waking up in the middle of the night saying, I need one more thing, it wouldn't have happened. And those stories will help you coach, teach, and motivate. And one way I used to use stories before I knew storytelling was a thing, was in the interview process. I would ask something similar to what you just talked about, which was hindsight 2020 question. Hindsight being 2020, well, give me a time of when something went really, really wrong. It was a disaster. However, it's something you played forward into your life that you were able to have lessons learned, and it applied and it changed how you worked and think. Now, my example, I used to use one of my first recruiting retail manager stories. And a lot of the people I was recruiting were like, I can't believe you're sharing this. But I was like, look, if I'm going to ask you to be brave and think and probably panic, where is this woman going with this? it's only fair I gave. So I told that story way too much about the moment at night when you're working in retail, standing 7 days on your feet, you're thinking, how much trouble could somebody get it into 2 hours? I'm just going to hire a breathing, living person. And apparently a person get into a lot of trouble and do some stuff that doesn't help you. So it was my 2020 question. So I used to coach managers afterwards when they let me have a corporate job to say, you don't want to have this happen. You will pay and stay, you know, in triplicate and quadruplicate if you go and make the wrong decision. But it was about that, take a chance to look and reflect. And they're going to curate. And it's a great tool to use when you're looking at your own next step. Where do I want to take my career? Well, here's some commonalities along the way that we can pay attention to and play it forward. So go with your strengths. Go with what you love. You know, if you got lit up in certain jobs because you were doing things that really spoke to you, why are you not engaging that now? Or where can you bring those pieces in now? It doesn't mean quit your job. It means build a space to have that around you. So those are a couple of things I was thinking about. That's simple, like, I'm going to write a story and write my memoir. But it's you're really writing your future story when you're doing that, at this, especially if you've got some years to work with. You have some time to add to it. You
can open, yes,
abridged a bit, you know, an added volume two.
So. Right, exactly. Exactly, right. The story doesn't end, right? It doesn't end when you end the memoir. So yeah, that's a great point. I want to summarize a little bit, because I, you know, like you said, we like to be practical, and I love those examples that you gave. And for me, I think that, you know, if I were to give the steps of what people can do who are listening to this podcast, and they've probably heard some. Yeah, exactly. That's right. That's right. Yes, yes. Call us. Exactly. That's the first step. But, you know, there are things that, because, I mean, you just mentioned, you know, it's, you know, a memoir, life story, it can feel really intimidating. But you're right. It's just sort of like, go to that thing that lights you up. You know, to me, that's the first thing. What lights you up? What's an experience that you were like, wow, you know, that really, you know, it didn't look good at first, but man, did I overcome that challenge? You know, start there. And I think maybe even before that, if you don't feel like you've got that, if you feel like you're been stuck with that, which happens to a lot of people, you're not alone if that's what's going on. I think what we were talking about earlier, you know, the why, that bigger thing that you aspire to, that, you know, why do you think you need a story, and why now? Like, what's the urgency at this moment? And there's always something, I mean, in the world we live in right now, certainly, you know, it's at any given point, there's something that's urgent. And see if you can connect with that. See if you can find that point of connection for yourself, of just like, what's that bigger thing that I want to aspire to? And then what's the experience that lights me up around that? You know, that would be the second step. And then the third is to put it together. And you're right, this is where we come in, right? but it's true that, you know, you can do this by also finding people who are trustworthy listeners, you know, and who won't judge, you know, and give you quote unquote constructive feedback that feels extremely critical and kind of shuts you down. And so, you know, you want to avoid that. But I think just these few steps of, what's that bigger thing? What's the experience that's connected to it? You know, that already starts to light you up, and then you put it together. And you mentioned this earlier, that then it's about empathy and understanding. It's not necessarily about the perfect structure, you know, or the story where you drop the mic at the end of the story and you leave the stage. No, this is about dialogue, right? It's about listening to that response. So that's what I would leave our audience with. For today, in terms of finding that voice of yours and you know, raising that individual voice of yours so that you can really get to that bigger intention that you have, that bigger aspiration that you have, and express it very clearly and effectively.
And you have treasures in here and here, you just have to unearth it. And when you get it started, it's amazing. And it's the gift to yourself, first of all. You feed yourself, and then you can share with others. And I have an expression I'm going to leave with too. I used it at this conference. I don't know if anybody patented it yet. I hope not. It was story tourism that, you know, like we go on a trip and we see things differently. We see it brickwork or roadworks or topography. When we do that, we pay attention to ourselves a little bit different, to look at ourselves with a fresh eye. And I'm going to Google that when I get off to make sure if it's registered. I should copyright that phrase and use it a lot.
I love it. I love it. Story tourism. Well, that's a great call to action for our audience to go out
and
practice your story tourism and travel with your stories, especially at a time when it's hard to travel. So stories help us do that. So fantastic. Well, thanks, Jules. I want to thank you once more, and just always a pleasure to be with you and listen always to your stories and your practical insights.
Okay. Well, listen, all the best to everybody out there. We're all figuring out and learning this together, and put all those experiences to good use, and just try. Give it a go.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Narrative Story Talks. For more information on the narrative listening and storytelling method and how it can help your business, go to narrative.com.